Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You can give yourself the best basis possible to be as healthy as possible just by planning a little bit. Meal planning is the key, I think. And enjoy food. Enjoy cooking real food. Because if you like to cook and you make cooking joyful, then you're going to cook real food and then you're going to be more healthy.
That's a clip from today's interview with Jackie Kearney, MasterChef finalist and cookbook author. But first, catch up with myself and Molly as we talk half marathon training, vegan hospital food, and review new arancini balls, vegan bacon, and protein bars. If you're new to the podcast, I'm Holly Johnson, and I'm editor of Vegan Food and Living. And my co-host, Molly Pickering, is the digital executive of veganfoodandliving.com. Gym kit right now. Do you ever do that? Like, you put it on in the morning because it just you think, if I put on my gym kit, then it will make me do some workouts or go for a run or something.
Active wear. Have you heard that song?
Yes. Like,
active wear. Yeah. that's me. But I oh my god, I've not even told you. Guess what I'm doing next year?
Half marathon.
Oh god, this, I'm so predictable. Yes, I am.
Are you doing the London one?
The London landmark.
I was thinking about doing that.
Oh my god, I don't know. Well, I am doing it, but
bit scared.
Running is just a bit boring, isn't it? I shouldn't have this. I shouldn't have this attitude. I'm trying to get out of it because running is great, and I enjoy running. That is what I'm saying to myself. And I just basically really wanted a challenge that sort of inspires me to get active over like winter and Christmas, because as soon as the dark and cold days come, I am so inactive. Like, I don't do any exercise, not any exercise, but like from in the summer where I'm like going for like walks in the day or the afternoon or the evenings or whatever, like that doesn't happen. I'm not really doing like HIIT workouts in the house because it's cold and it's dark and it's miserable.
Yeah.
So I thought, if I do this, it's in April, I have to train over the winter period.
I've done one half marathon before, and it was the Bristol half about 10 years ago, and I did it in 2 hours 22 minutes. I don't know if that's good or not. I didn't train very much, but I was so excited. All I could think about was going for a meal afterwards. So I was like, yes, I'm going to eat this massive meal. I'm going to go get pizza. And I went to, it was like ZZ's or something. And I felt a bit dizzy, went to the toilet and completely span out. Then we had to all leave the restaurant, me and my family. And I threw up in a nappy bag all the way home. And that's like my memories of it. So ever since, I'm like,
no, Holly, no.
I think it's the lactic acid, isn't it? When you like suddenly stop and then.
It took you, why did I think I was going to be able to do it in like an hour?
Definitely not. No.
Oh, bollocks. Did you run the whole thing?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Okay. It was, I did find it hard.
Okay.
But yeah, I pretty much, I don't think I walked at all because I was doing it with my friend who runs loads of marathons and she wouldn't let me walk.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fair. So you probably just like all the adrenaline wore off you and then you were just throwing up in ZZ's.
Burn out, yeah. But I've been thinking about doing the London Landmarks one as well and raising some money.
Oh my God, maybe we should do it
together, shall we?
Yeah.
And then we can track our progress on the podcast, which would be really fun, and talk about...
I think that would be fun.
Yeah, okay, right, I'm going to do it.
I've started doing Couch to 5K, like I started this week.
Okay, brilliant.
So to like ease me in, because I went for a run with my friend on Saturday and it was just like we run together, wasn't any coaching like through an app or whatever. And I was just like, oh, I kind of really need some help with this.
Yeah, I do find it's easier when you're running with someone. It takes your mind off things a bit.
Yeah. And I think with like apps like that, it almost feels like you are running with someone because it's like, come on, let's go. Like a bit of extra motivation rather than you just being like, I'm going to stop now.
Yeah. I think with what I always found with the running when I was sort of really into it, when I lived in Bristol, was that unless I did like the core work and sort of the kind of strength training alongside, I would get injured and I'd get like pains and stuff. So
yeah, that's what I've been told. So I'm doing two like at home HIIT classes a week as well.
Oh, amazing.
I know this has just turned into our fitness podcast.
I know.
We're changed women.
We are. No more talking about alcohol every week.
I know. Oh, I'm not gonna lie though, knowing you say that you, when you were running the race, you were just like thinking of the meal. I've already thought about going to the pub after, like, the race hasn't even, it's in 6 months and I'm already thinking about the pub afterwards.
Brilliant. Well, whatever gets you through it. Are you going to raise some money? I was thinking of maybe doing it for a vegan charity.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I was thinking about maybe doing it for a food bank charity.
That's a good idea.
Because, yeah, state of the world, every little helps.
Well, anyone listening, stay tuned each week for our progress over the next 6 months. I don't know how I've just looped myself into that.
No, I'm so sorry. By the way, we're running a half marathon.
I'm like, yeah, okay. Oh, dear. Well, talking about health and fitness, hospital food in New York City is going to be plant-based by default.
So I know.
The standard will be vegan food going forwards. So yeah, that's news this week or last week, I think, which is very exciting, isn't it?
It is exciting. So I think it's in I don't really understand like the American healthcare situations, but because I wrote the story on this for Vegan Food and Living website, and it was something like New York Hospitals and something, I think it's like a healthcare brand or whatever, but they have launched this like initiative, and I think earlier this year they started it by doing vegan lunches as a default. They cut customers, not customers at all, patients.
customers.
Well, I mean, they are paying for their healthcare, so yeah, true, they are essentially customers. Yeah. Patients can opt for non-vegan meals, but apparently it's like people have stuck with the plant-based option, which is good.
Absolutely brilliant, because the mayor of New York City is vegan, isn't he? And he's a big
yes. I think he's plant-based, but
okay.
Yeah, he's done a lot the last few years. I think he's sort of launched like school initiatives and stuff for like Meatless Mondays and I think Vegan Fridays as well, so that's really cool. It's just bizarre that hospitals don't serve healthy foods. Like, it's,
I know
I don't understand it. It just doesn't make sense.
So backward, isn't it? Like, you know, in this day and age that they're serving like not even sort of it's not even just about the fact they're serving sort of processed meat and things like that when it is linked to cancer.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that the whole lot of it, you know, white sliced bread, like just everything that they seem to serve is just so, yeah. It's just...
And also everything that they warn against as well. It's really contradictory. I think my nan went in a couple of weeks ago and she was having a tumor removed from her lung and they give her a fry up.
Oh my God.
I know, it's bizarre. Like I understand, you know, you want people to, if they're low on energy or whatever, you know, you want them to get their calories or whatever back up, but a fry up.
I mean, I'm just going to go and bang my head against the wall.
I know. It's really baffling. It's
something we really need to campaign for. Well, I got in touch with Shireen Kassam from the Plant-Based Health Professionals and asked her to write a feature for the magazine Vegan Food and Living, which is now on sale. It's the first of our Christmas issues. And she's written a brilliant article in there about, you know, how a vegan NHS could work and the impact of it, and, you know, why we should be championing this. Okay, you know, yes, like, you know, in New York, I think they're still offering different options, aren't they? Mm. But having plant-based as kind of the default and then you can opt for something else is just, it would be such a massive step forward and would save them billions, because it's just
so much money. Like, I know what you're saying about like maybe having it as plant-based as the default and then the option, like that in itself surely would just be so much better, and as you say, so much more cost effective. I understand maybe that timing, like time spent cooking the food or whatever is an issue, and that's why they resort to sort of ready meals and stuff like that, but I just don't understand it. I really it just comes down to lack of funding as well, I think, doesn't it? But that's a whole other ball game. Let's not go down that route.
Well, we've got some reviews to do this week, some exciting new products. Arancini balls. Arancini. We now have this as a vegan option in Tesco supermarkets as of September 2022. Sheesh have bought them out, and they're kind of like, they're traditionally sort of rice balls, aren't they? Coated in breadcrumbs and filled with like a cheesy filling.
Yeah, like a creamy sort of cheesy sauce.
Yeah, so this is tomato and mozzarella flavour. Mm. And then they're the first plant-based arancini on the market, and they're £4. What did you think of them?
They were good. I couldn't eat all of them at the same time, but they were very, well, obviously not all of them at the same time. Yeah. I couldn't eat the whole pack to myself. They were nice though. I made like a nice little tomato like dipping sauce to dip them in, and they were really, really tasty.
Yeah, really yummy. I mean, pretty calorie dense, but really nice as a treat. Or if you've got people coming around, you could just serve like one or two.
Yeah, just for like a little sort of antipasti sort of thing.
Yeah, with some sort of healthier options on the side. Yeah. I did really like them. And another new product that's brand new is La Vie Bacon, which is it's just arrived from La Francaise.
La Francaise.
and they've got a lard on packs, haven't they? And then the strips of bacon. They're about £3 at Sainsbury's. I did compare them to this. Isn't bacon, and they are higher in fat and lower in protein, but they are very yummy. I made a carbonara, again pretty calorie dense, but mainly for the kids, and my son ate it and he didn't notice. He said, is this bacon? And I was like, yeah. No, I think
yes, actually,
he said, is this ham? And I said, oh, no, it's pieces of bacon. And he went, oh, okay, and carried on eating it. I was like, yes.
Oh, I love that. I really like this. When cooking the bacon, the La Vie bacon, it doesn't, the rations this is, it doesn't take long at all. And it can burn if you're not looking at it, because they're so thin. It's like the like crispy bacon rashers kind of things. But yeah, I love these. I preferred them to like the other sort of streaky bacon, vegan bacon packers that are out there. I think the other ones have a bit of a weird taste and they're a bit too, I don't know, the texture's weird, but I really like these ones.
Yeah, some of them give you that a bit of an aftertaste, like they're too smoky.
Not nice. Kind of like, yeah, it just tastes quite artificial. Yeah. But I love these.
Yeah, they're really good just for like having, you know, on a weekend or just as like an emergency meal, like for me.
Yeah.
With the kids, it's just like, oh my God, I just need something quick and easy. So I know popularity of kind of faux meats, fake meats, whatever you want to call them, is kind of, I don't know, being called into question a bit, isn't it? And waning perhaps a little bit. I don't know. I'd love to hear what listeners think about it.
Yeah. So, it definitely it definitely divides people, doesn't it? I think even like people that aren't vegan and think about going vegan, they say, well, I wouldn't eat these meat alternatives, I'd just go veggie, or well, not veggie, but like only have like whole foods. Which is great, and that, like, that's my mum's sort of attitude. If I ever make her food, she's just like, don't put any fake meat in it. She always calls it tofu as well. She's like, don't put any of that tofu in it.
Oh, like, God, my husband always says tofu. I'm like, it's tofu.
Tofu.
Yeah, tofu. It's like, ugh!
It's so annoying. It's so annoying. And falafel.
Yeah,
falafel. Falafel. My mum, oh, bless her. She's cute, but she does my head in.
Don't they all?
Yeah, it does divide people. I mean, I've certainly cut down the amount of fake meat that I eat. Obviously, we are very lucky to have samples sent to us frequently, so we do get to try these products, but I don't, it's not something that I eat like every single day,
twice
a day sort of thing, because it's too calorie dense, it's too artificial. It's not artificial, but yes, artificial in a way.
Yeah, I mean, it's still processed, isn't it?
That's,
but
the
I mean,
I'm
compared to the meat alternatives, they're so much lower in salt and
for sure
fat and everything. So, you know, yeah, they definitely still have a place, I think. And you know, we don't live in a perfect world. Sometimes you just gotta throw a meal together.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing we reviewed this week could come in handy with our half marathon training.
Our training, yes.
Yeah, Trek Protein Flapjacks. And they've got a whole range of flavours that are all vegan, but they've got a new peanut butter flavour made with gluten-free oats. My kids literally like loved these. They were just...
Why are they so good?
They are very nice. Salty, sweet.
It kind of almost seems like white chocolatey peanut butter. I don't know what I was meant to look at the sugar quantity, but they are good. And I think it's like 9 grams of protein per bar.
Yeah, so high in protein. They are fairly high in fat and sugar. But obviously peanut butter is kind of, you know, hot, healthy fats, but
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I think they're good. You know, you could sort of cut them up into little squares and just sort of have, you know, little pieces throughout the week.
No, throughout the week. No,
after each run.
I ate the whole one in seconds.
Did you?
They're so tasty.
They are really nice. They're just quite dense, aren't they, and filling. But if you're yummy,
they're a nice sugar treat that's not too naughty.
Yeah, exactly. Well, stick around to listen to my interview with Jackie Kearney coming up next. She's absolutely brilliant, had so much to say. I could have sort of run like a 5-hour episode with her, I think. I mean, she's the author of a new book, Healthy Vegan Street Food. So we talk a lot about street food, we talk about health and nutrition, we talk about her autoimmune disease and healthy aging. So there's loads in this interview that everyone can get something out of. Today we have teamed up with Cracked, the no egg egg, which is the world's most versatile plant-based liquid egg replacement product, which allows you to cook a range of sweet and savory recipes without actually using eggs. It's amazing.
We love that.
That's right. They've actually made a plant-based egg that acts and bakes and tastes just like an egg. I mean, what a world we're living in right now, Molly.
Vegan eggs is hard to crack, literally.
The best bit is, it's not actually an egg. It hasn't come from a chicken. No animals have been involved whatsoever, which is obviously better for them and the environment. It comes in the form of a liquid whole egg, and you can literally make anything from like egg-free scrambled eggs, omelets, Yorkshire puddings, cakes. It's such a handy product to just have in your cupboard. Do you use it a lot? Because I know I do.
I have used it. And do you know what? I've actually got quite a funny story to say about this. I made a tiramisu and I was so excited. I was like, yes, I'm going to use this no egg to make the sort of ladyfinger part of it. And the ladyfingers came out so well. They were so soft, very moist. And then I was doing the cream cheese layer and I bought soft cheese instead of cream cheese. And I thought that I could sort of mask the sort of cheesy smell, but I couldn't. So I had tiramisu that tasted like cheese, but the ladyfingers were delicious.
If you're wondering what it's made from pea protein. So it's obviously really rich in protein, and it's also got added vitamin D and B12, which is brilliant. And it's free from 14 food allergens, cholesterol, and it's virtually fat-free. Amazing.
We love to see it.
I know. It's available at Tesco, Ocado, Marks and Spencer's, Boots, and online from The Vegan Kind for £3. And you can find it in the chilled plant and meat substitute aisles. Each bottle is equivalent to 6 eggs, so it lasts you a little while. And it's certified by the Vegan Society. The best news is they are giving away 10 Cracked the No Egg recipe books worth £20 each, which contain some delicious recipes for making, you know, all kinds of things using this product. To be in with a chance of winning a copy, all you have to do is head to veganfoodandliving.com/competitions and you can enter there. As I said, I'm joined by Jackie Kearney today, who was a top 4 finalist on BBC One's MasterChef in 2011 and runner-up for Best Main Dish at the British Street Food Awards in 2012. Jackie is an award-winning author of 4 books, Vegan Street Food, My Vegan Travels, Plant-Based Burgers and Vegan Christmas Feasts. And Jackie teaches healthy plant-forward cookery classes at her retreat in Italy. And her new book, Healthy Vegan Street Food, is out today.
They've moved the date.
Oh,
I know. It's okay, though. They've only moved it till next week, and I don't know why. But yes, it's out in this week. It's out now. It's going to be out now in like 7 days' time.
Okay. So. Oh, fantastic.
Very exciting.
So how's things over in Italy then? It sounds like an amazing lifestyle running retreat out there.
I know. It is. I mean, it'd be very important for me to say it's not all unicorns and rainbows. You know, you're building a business. It's like any business. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. It comes with its stresses. And we've had some serious challenges this year. Well, over the years, I mean, COVID was a major challenge, but obviously we all had that challenge, and especially the hospitality industry. So I don't like to complain about the COVID experience for us, because we were at least living somewhere very, very beautiful, and we weren't stuck in an apartment in a city centre. We should be opening in December, which is really exciting, but also terrifying. So I keep running. I've got about 8 lists that are all like running at the same time. I keep looking at them going, oh no, we haven't got enough dining chairs. You know, we're just like panicking about what it's all going to be like. And then we bring all the teachers in. So, because people say to me, oh, do you teach yoga? And it's like, no, I like doing yoga, but I don't teach it. So we bring in like a yoga teacher, and we have a breathwork instructor, which hopefully we'll talk a little bit more about breathwork later, because I just feel that's a super important thing for wellness.
Yeah.
It sounds really simple, like we've got to learn to breathe and to breathe deeper and to breathe in the way that we need to heal ourselves a little bit more. You know, I think there's a lot more evidence now, thanks to Wim Hof and the like, teaching us you know, to breathe. I'm just even slowing my breath now and breathing a bit more deeply. Conscious breathing, that's what we all need.
We do, yeah. Things are, you know, we're living in a pretty stressful world right now, aren't we? So I think, yes, you know, we need to sort of adopt some of these habits just to kind of get us through these crazy times.
I think so. And I think people have felt it more since COVID. I think people have, you know, having that pause of a huge pause of time allowed a lot of people to reflect on what they did as a job. It allowed people to see some space in their life for their family, to spend time with their family. And people made changes, I think, coming out of COVID in the way that they worked, more home working, more flexible working. And all those are like silver linings for sure. But I do think there's also a huge amount of rising pressure now because of the financial crisis, and it's creating a lot of more stress for people. And stress is so destructive to us. You know, we're going to talk about healthy food, but, you know, stress is like this huge, huge factor of this impact that it has on our bodies. Our bodies do weird things when they're under stress.
Yeah,
it's quite scary, really.
Yeah, it is. I know. Yeah, it certainly, like you said, we're talking a bit, but it certainly impacted me. And I know it's, you know, perhaps impacted you in the past.
Yeah, I think it's what brought me here, really.
Yeah.
run away to the mountains.
Oh, bless you. Well, tell us about, you know, your story then. So how did you get into cooking? Because you obviously, you know, got a real passion for it.
Oh, yeah. I've always been passionate about food, even as a child. I was always stood on the stool next to the cooker doing some cooking. And I think becoming a vegetarian in the early to mid 80s, it was such, you know, there was only really Linda McCartney who was doing stuff at the time, or it was just starting at that point, really. And there was a lot of limitations for either eating out, if I went out with my family for dinner, or when I left home quite young, there really wasn't that much choice. And there wasn't the choice in the supermarkets either. So I had to learn to cook because I liked food. And I was like, I'm hungry. I want something more to eat than just some grilled veggies. I want them to be more exciting than that. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love grilled vegetables, but give me a chimichurri sauce on top. You know, yeah. It was like, I want flavor. I love flavor. I love sour. I love hot and spicy and tangy, and I love savory flavors. So that drove me into wanting to cook. And I was very, very passionate about cooking. I used to play in my little bedsit when I was like 17. I used to play Ready Steady Cook and open the cupboard and just see what I had in the cupboard. And there might be like four things because I was quite poor. And I'd be like, right, what can I make out of this? And it sort of grew from there. But I didn't get much support from my family in the idea of being a cook or a chef. If anything, they really looked down on it. You know, my dad really disapproved. So I just followed the usual path of, you know, went into education, and I ended up doing a master's degree in applied research. And I worked as an academic researcher for 18 years in the NHS and academia. And it was during that, it was at the end of that time that I decided we'd gone traveling as a family, and we took a gap year, a family gap year. And it was when I took a step back, I thought, I really want to do this for a living. I want to know if I'm good enough to do this for a living. Like, can I do this at 40? You know, is this going to be possible? And that's how I sort of stepped into the MasterChef arena. You know, I very much, you know, I remember very clearly John Turow saying to me, why are you here? And I said, because I want to know if I'm good enough to do this for a living. And he was like, you're really, like, you know what you're coming in to do. And I was like, yeah, I don't hate my job. I'm not here because I hate my job. I love my job. I'm here because I really, really want to know, can I cook for other people, you know? And it turns out that I could. So, and I love it. I love it. It gives me a fire in my belly. It gives me joy to feed other people. You know, it's like my love language for my family. And for, this is what I love about the retreat, is being able to cook for a small number of people in a really high quality way and teach them about vegan food. Although we use the term plant forward because we don't want to put anybody off from coming to the retreat. Now, obviously, I know the listeners are going to be like, we don't mind if it's got the label vegan. But I believe that if we're going to engage the omnivores in stepping away from the meat, we have to use like open language that doesn't terrify them and make them think, oh no, she's going to make me just eat your celery and drink juices every day. So, I mean, you can just drink juices every day if you want here, but I want that kind of language to really bring people in to eating in this way. This is what I feel like this is what my path is, to introduce people to eating really good food and then think, wow, this tastes amazing. I love it. You know, I could eat this at home. And then doing the cookery lessons, it's paired with that to be able for them to go home and think, I can do this at home. I can make this really tasty food at home for my family. And if that means that somebody's going to eat plant-based and vegan a couple of times a week from not doing before, I mean, the impact on the planet and for all of us and on farming would be huge.
Yeah, I think the term vegan still scares people a little bit, doesn't it? What was it like being on MasterChef then? I bet it was a bit nerve-wracking.
Hugely nerve-wracking and really stressful. Even though I absolutely loved it, I loved it. But I didn't realise the stress it took on me until afterwards. I did get caught up in it, and you know, you just want to go as far as you can. And at that time, no vegetarian had ever gone that far in the competition. No vegetarian or vegan had ever made it past the first round.
So that extra pressure, isn't it?
Actually. And then when I made vegan dishes, which I did a couple of times, I felt even more pressure, you know, especially from like quite a traditional judge like Greg.
Yeah.
He's quite traditional in his food. You know, John's a lot more open to, I remember cooking tempeh for the first time. And John was like, me and John were chatting about tempeh, and he was talking about dishes he had in Australia, because obviously with its having its origins in Indonesia, it's huge in Australia. It's quite an everyday food for people, veggies and vegans to be eating. Whereas at the time, here, well, in the UK, it was kind of, oh, what's that, you know? And I always felt like it was a bit of an uphill struggle with Greg to sort of win him over. It was there are things that happened that were unbelievable, like learning to make pastry from Michelle Roux Senior, meeting Yotam Ottolenghi. I mean, Yotam is honestly one of the dearest chefs I've ever met, very kind and sweet. Alexis Gautier, who actually is now runs a vegan restaurant in Soho, doesn't he? Gautier Amazing. Soho. Yes. And they made that place completely vegan. And he was so lovely to me. And, you know, I knew there was something different about him. And then a couple of years later, he switched Gautier Soho to being fully vegan. Amazing. And I thought, I always liked him, you see. I always liked him. Very open-minded chef, very sensitive soul. So I met some of these amazing chefs and learned some incredible things from them. And I made some very dear friends as well. You know, some of my friends who I've made during not just the competition when I was in it, but since. I actually managed the MasterChef Street Food Bus for a year together with Matt Follis. They would switch it out. So it would be myself and Natalie Coleman or myself and Ping Coombs. And I got to know them as well. And we became really good friends. Like, Natalie's one of my best friends now, even though we weren't even in the competition together. So yeah, it was a great, and Tim Anderson, I feel like people like that, I wouldn't have met them in my everyday life because our age difference, you know, I'm quite a bit older than the young guns. So I feel, really, really privileged that I had that opportunity and exposure. It was a bit of a shame about how I stopped being a guest judge. That always does niggle me slightly, if I'm completely honest, but you know, I got a lot of backlash, really. I was caught between a rock and a hard place because they would invite me back as a guest judge. And then some people would complain because they would say, how can she be a judge when she's not eating the meat and fish? Mm. And then other people would complain saying, we hate her because she's eating her vegetables off a plate that's got meat and fish on it.
And
I was like, and I remember at the time thinking, you all are being mean and none of you are break here, and I just want to be at least a representative here of people who don't eat meat and fish, you know. Or you know, it was a difficult situation to be in, and then you've got newspapers like The Sun running horrible articles about you, in the you know, glorifying the backlash, it kind of, it was good to step away from it, I think, at that time then, and to, you know, things have really changed now, though, I feel. I do feel we've made a lot of progress with people's, the way people eat, people's choices in what they eat. You know, we get less of a hard time now when we step into a restaurant and we say, have you got plant-based dishes? You know, I feel like since I've gone gluten-free, I've kind of upped the awkwardness again. And I don't mean to, you know, it's just a bit, it's really, yeah, it's a bit tricky, really. That's my dog, my vocal dog chatting in the background, by the way. He's a giant schnauzer and he's very, very talkative.
Oh, bless him. Well, your new book's obviously focuses on street food, and that's obviously a big passion of yours, isn't it? And I know street food is, you know, really popular with our listeners and also readers of the magazine. What are some of the standout recipes then in the book? Because, I mean, I just love street food. I could eat that literally morning, day and night for the rest of my life.
Yeah, me too. I think with street food that you might get on the British streets, I do think there's a tendency to veer towards fried food, which, and I'm not saying it isn't the same in Asian street food. You know, if I were on a bak choy in Bangkok, the chances are that I'm going to have some kind of rice batter, deep fried vegetable with some delicious dipping sauce. You know, and I think that's partly what this book for me was about, was bringing to the fore more street food inspired dishes that were more naturally healthful. So stepping away from the fried food a little bit. And so for me, some of those, and also just using as much adaptable ingredients as possible, because the thing about street food, the basic tenets of street food are that it's seasonal, that it's accessible, which also makes it affordable, you know. And so by having recipes that you can adapt to those things, or that are easy things to always have in. So one of the recipes I absolutely love and I make probably every other week are the Haribara green cutlets with a cashew kachumba chat. So basically they're like these little potato spiced patties, like little cutlets. But they're made with sweet potato and super greens. So they've got kale and spinach and peas in them. And peas and spinach, you can always get frozen. That's one of those great things, isn't it, that we all have in the freezer. And it blends all those up together with some beautiful herbs and spices to make these little patties, like little cutlets. And I bake those. And it's served with a kind of a kachumba, which is like a chopped salad. But I use toasted cashews and chat powder to give it like spices and pomegranate seeds. So it's got all these superfoods in it. These, you know, lots of protein, sweet potatoes are anti-inflammatory, lots of greens. It's not fried. It's absolutely delicious and it's so satisfying. You have a big dollop of coconut yogurt. And I did the nutritional analysis on it and I was like, this is such a complete dish to eat. And it ticks all the boxes of everything and it tastes so good and it's really easy to make. So that's one that I would definitely direct people to make, first of all, because you can make it in advance and then have it as a starter or a small plate for if you're cooking for friends. And honestly, you would really wow them with it. It's all my friends who I cook it for, like, a lot of them do say to me, I don't normally like sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
which I'm a bit like that about.
Yeah, you know? Same.
Because I know they're good for me. They're good for you. They're anti-inflammatory. And then and then you kind of go, oh, I wish I liked them more than I did. You know?
That sounds an incredible dish. I'm dreaming of that right now.
It's dreamy. It's really super tasty. And then another dish that I'd really recommend, and I actually made at the weekend for some friends, is it's in the Sri Lanka section, and it's the garlic curry, the Sri Lankan garlic curry. Now, that, again, sounds quite overwhelming. And if you looked at the photograph, you'd think, woof, that's a lot of garlic, you know, and in the recipe, it's like you know, 45 to 50 garlic cloves. And you think,
oh my gosh.
Right? Yeah. So you immediately think, wow, what a lot of garlic. But the way that it's cooked and the flavors that it's cooked with, it becomes this incredible sticky and sweet and spicy deliciousness that you can just scoop up with some paratha or a little coconut roti. And it was actually served to us. We got married in Sri Lanka and it was served to us as part of our wedding banquet. And I remember being so blown away with it. And I always wanted to, I remember wishing I'd put it in my first book. So then this time around, I was like, that is going in this book because, you know, garlic's so good for us and it's such a healthy dish and it's super easy to make. Like you can make it with your eyes closed. You know, you can, it's once you've got your garlic peeled, I mean, it's in the pan in 5 or 10 minutes. The main prep is just peeling like that many garlic cloves. But just YouTube some of the hacks. There are some hacks for doing that. So I would highly recommend. Although, and I do believe certain big supermarkets now sell peeled garlic in bags. I saw that in the last time I was home in Sainsbury's, actually. And I was like, ah, because a lot of restaurants buy garlic peeled already.
Right.
So, and now I think it's leaking into the domestic market.
Yeah.
Because people... It's very handy to have a little peeled garlic.
We're all so short on time, aren't we? Let's face it. So, yeah.
Which is, we need, this is why we need dishes as well. I like to think that this book has got a real range of dishes. It's got dishes that you can make in 15 to 20, maybe 30 minutes at the most to be on the table. And you need that for the middle of the week because being healthy does mean eating real food, and eating real food means we have to do some prep. And being veggies and vegans and plant forward people and people who really try to, you know, I've got friends who they might still eat the occasional bit of fish, but they eat vegan for 6 days a week. And it means you've got, you're going to have to get your apron on and get in that kitchen. And who's got the time to spend 2 hours a day cooking?
Yeah,
I know I don't, you know. So I think it's really important to have like quick recipes. And then like project recipes, I like to call them, you know, the ones at the weekend where you'd like hang out in the kitchen for a few hours and make a little banquet for yourself. So I think one of my standout dishes for like a super quick dish is the Southern style bamboo shoot curry, which is a kind of creation that came from my head based on this little cafe that I used to go in on this Thai island. And the lady used to make it for me because she knew I didn't want fish sauce and I didn't want meat or fish. So she'd make me this bamboo shoot and tofu curry. And it was so good. And so one day I just watched her making it and I was like, I don't know. And I tried to find out of her, does it have a name? And she seemed to think it didn't have a name. And it was just her creation for me. So anyway, I've recreated it for the book and it can be on the table in 20 minutes.
Oh, amazing.
Which is absolutely, you know, that's absolutely, my husband's just taking the dog outside. he's singing in the background to you. So yeah, it's, you know, having dishes like that, having 20 minute dishes, 30 minute dishes that are satisfying, that are going to satisfy you, also be nutritionally balanced. I think we've got to raise the bar on that now with vegan cooking. We can't be lazy about this stuff because, you know, if you're a young vegan, if you're in your early 20s, you can get away with so much. And I know this because I was once a very unhealthy early 20-something vegetarian who used to eat far too much dairy, didn't really have a balanced diet, you know. And that's when I became interested in vegan food, was in my 20s, because it was just every option was cheese. And I was like, no one should be eating this much dairy. This was long before we talked about dairy farming and the impact of that on the environment. Mm. I was thinking, this isn't good. This is not good for us.
Yeah.
Anyway, it turns out I'm lactose intolerant. So it's probably my body trying to tell me something. So, once that started to happen, it was like, you know, you start to really think about the balance of the food that you're eating. And whilst it's great that all of us choose not to eat these different products because of, for whatever reasons, it might be for the love of animals, it might be for the environment, and it might just be because we want to do what's research tells us is the best thing for our body, because, you know, there's an unequivocal fact that a plant-based diet is the best thing you can do for your cardio health. I once heard this statement that said, have you ever met our cardiologists? There's two kinds of cardiologists, vegan ones and those who haven't read the research. And I love that quote. I love that quote. It's brilliant. Like, it's evidence-based, you know.
Yeah.
But if we're going to talk about the evidence-based, we've got to think about, and this is my old background of work, you see, I used to work in evidence-based practice. We've got to look at, what do we need more of? What do we really need to concentrate when we're making our food, making sure we're eating a variety of colours of food, really colourful food, really varied food, not eating the same thing all the time, because it's easy when you're tired to fall into the same dishes all the time and then you're not getting the variation. And as people who don't eat meat and fish and don't eat dairy, you've got to make sure you're getting those nutrients. You know, you need to take a supplement for B12. That's the fact of the matter.
Yeah.
You know, you can't ignore these things. Now, you can ignore it when you're in your early 20s and your body probably will let you get away with it. But then you get to our age, and I'm even a little bit older than you, and your body goes, no.
Yeah.
You know, and what we don't want to see is in 10, 20 years' time, 30 years' time, all those of us who made these choices having higher rates of other things like problems with dementia, problems with Alzheimer's, you know, these kinds of things that we know are linked to certain nutritional things. You know, the B vitamins is super important. I can't get that point enough across. I know most educated vegans know it, but new vegans might not. Or if you're in your 20s and you're still kind of, yeah, vegan junk food, because yeah. We're all... Don't get me wrong, I wrote a whole book on it. I love vegan junk food. But we can't eat that all the time.
No.
Because it's really bad for us, in the same way any junk food's bad for us.
Exactly.
You know? So we've got to take a balanced approach, I think, and we've got to like really take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to be able to fight the vegan cause and get people eating vegan food if we're all looking like healthy, you know, and living off fried food and sweet potato fries.
Health is so important. I think you're right. We kind of all think we're a bit invincible, don't we, in our 20s and 30s and having just hit 43 last year, the end of last year. And it does, things do seem to change, don't they?
Don't they just? It's a bit of a wake-up call going into you, isn't it? And then I hate to tell you this, Holly.
Oh,
but
no.
Then there's another step when you go into your 50s and then you're like, hang on a minute. I'm not so happy about this now. What's going on? I'd just like to wake up one day where my joints don't hurt, please.
Oh, gosh. I don't like it.
I don't like it. I don't like this aging business. But that's one of the reasons, like, I, you know, myself and my husband, we chose to come here to do this retreat because I believe that you live different phases in your life. You know, you have your young teens and your 20s and your 30s. That's one particular phase. And you might be very career focused. You might be very active socially. Then you might have your child raising years if you choose to have children and a family. And that's a different kind of focus. And now I believe that when you go into your 50s and older, that's another phase of your life. And that actually, you know, the Japanese are very more attuned to doing this, which is where you would adapt your lifestyle to fit with that part of your age. And for us, we wanted to be working in a way that supports our aging health in the best way possible. And that doesn't mean sitting at a desk.
No.
For 50 hours a week, 40 hours a week, not moving enough, you know, all these kinds of things. These are really bad as you start to age. So for us doing this, it gives us better options. We're much more active than most 50-something. I wish I was 50, but we're much more active than most 50 somethings. And that's hopefully going to serve us well. You know, I do Pilates every day. I get on my mat every day. I do yoga and Pilates. My husband's like does quite a physical job now. So we're both in pretty good shape, I think, for our age, you know, and we can adapt our working to suit being like older people and not at a desk all the time. You know, I don't think my body could take that actually now if I just had to be at a desk all the time.
Well, they say it takes like, I think I saw a quote somewhere that kind of sitting is the new smoking. You know, it takes about 5 years off your life. And it's kind of like, ah!
That doesn't surprise me. That actually doesn't surprise me. My son has just joined the corporate world after leaving university. And he was really pleased to inform me the other week that he's got himself a stand-up desk.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think we've got to take on this, you know, we know more now than we knew when I was 20 and working in an office. We didn't even have somebody assess the ergonomics of our desk.
No.
We all ended up with repetitive strain. We had bad backs, you know, and it's like you've got to, if you take care of, the sooner you take care of it, the better you're going to feel when you're older. And there's no reason I want to go into our aging and being older healthy. I still want to travel. I still want to have adventures. I've just bought myself a stand-up paddleboard.
Oh, fantastic.
I have goals. I have goals of reaching Albenga Island on my paddleboard one day, not yet. But, you know, I want to still have those adventures. I want to still backpack around Southeast Asia. I want to do the things that I love. I don't want those doors to close on me. So I'm very driven to take really good care of myself. And part of that definitely comes from having this autoimmune disease. You know, that's was a big wake-up call for me, really.
So what happened with that then? Tell us what happened.
Yeah, I was running my business, my street food business, and I just started to feel really, really unwell. And I actually thought it was stress. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go to the GP. Like a bit of an idiot, really. I thought, oh, it's just stress. I'll meditate my way out of this. So I started practicing my meditation every day, thinking, well, this is weird. It's not getting better. And that's when I knew something was quite wrong, because I wasn't normally, you could do those kinds of practices and it would calm. Like, I felt anxious all the time. I was having heart palpitations and I just felt really, really unwell. And then my hands and feet started to feel like they were filled with lead. And I was on my driving the trailer, my Barbarella, my old Airstream kitchen, back from Jamie's Big Festival. And I couldn't see properly out of one of my eyes. And I pulled into the service station and I saw that one of my eyes had like really exploded and was pushing out of its socket. So I thought, oh, no. The stress of doing all of this has given me a brain tumor. That was my first reaction. Yeah. And I went to the GP and my GP was like, no, Jackie, you haven't got a brain tumor. You've got a thyroid disease. And I was like, but that's not where my thyroid is. My thyroid's here, not in my eyes. But it's apparently the tissue around your eyes is identical to the tissue on your thyroid. So when that becomes inflamed, your eyes can also become inflamed. And there are actually... there's a number of autoimmune diseases that affect the thyroid, but the two main ones that mostly affect women, and often women who are in their late 30s and 40s, which I was at the time, you can end up with either an overactive or an underactive thyroid, and it's being driven by the production of antibodies in your system. Mm-hmm. And so I found out that I have what's called Graves' disease, which is my body produces the Graves' antibodies, which attack my thyroid and make it hyperactive, which wastes muscle off my body, which is why I started to feel really weak, and it attacks my eyes. So I've been in treatment now for 11 years. I've had some periods of remission. I've had 3 eye surgeries, and I'm currently on a new drug protocol. It's not new in the world. It's just new for me.
Yeah.
And I have a new consultant at the wonderful Salford Royal. And I'm just really hoping that this works this time for me and stabilizes the disease. But what I did find was that how I took care of myself really affected the disease and the symptomatic responses that I would have. So I started to notice certain foods aggravated it and certain foods were better.
Right.
So when I started eating more anti-inflammatory foods, when I started controlling my glucose response. So I'm not saying I don't eat sugar. I do eat sugar. I do eat sweet foods, but I'm a bit of a glucose goddess fan, actually. A big believer that you can flatten that glucose response a little bit by the order that you eat food, which is basically how the Italians and French eat. It's why they're not fat, apparently.
Okay.
It's the order in which you eat your food. So if you sit down to have a meal and they bring bread to the table, don't just eat the bread straight away. Make sure you eat your salad, your antipasto with your grilled vegetables or maybe some raw veggies first, maybe some protein like some nuts first, and then you have your carbohydrates. And what it does is it changes your body's response to the sugars and glucose curve becomes flattened. And it means you don't have as much, you don't create these cells in your body that you create this response in your body that goes bouncing around, bashing into cells and damaging them. So by flattening the glucose curve, it's much less inflammatory on the system. And then, of course, the other thing that the French and Italians do is they take a little walk after dinner, which apparently is now evidence is showing that that's a huge thing to do. If you when you finished eating, sort of within 30 or 40 minutes of finishing your meal, just even if it's 10 minutes, just take a little walk or move around, just move your body for 10 minutes. It has a huge impact on how your body processes all the food you've just had. And that's why you should always have your dessert at the end of the meal, because your body's, again, it's like going to be something sweet. So, and they say this is the reason that Italians and Mediterranean people are slim is because they eat in this way. So there's a lot of evidence around that now, a lot of research being done to show how we can better structure the food we eat and the order in which we eat it. Okay. I don't eat gluten. So, but the thing you've got to be very careful of, if you cut out any food group, but particularly something like gluten, which is where it's where all the grains are, it's where all the fiber is. And fiber is one of the biggest protective factors for bowel disease, for protecting you against heart disease and coronary illnesses. So, you know, if you decide like I have, or you find that you eat better not having gluten in your diet, you have to make sure that you're getting lots of fiber elsewhere. So I eat loads of quinoa. I eat loads of like brown rice and black rice and red rice. I eat other grains, you know, like millet and sorghum and oats. You know, I just make sure I have lots of other fiber in my diet. And I think this is, you know, this is my passion where healthy food's concerned, is we can't have the Nutribabble. We can't have people telling us nonsense stuff or, you know, these fad diets. This isn't about fad diets. This is just about like having some really naturally healthy recipes that aren't difficult to make, that embrace the foods that we know are really good for us, and making them into something super tasty that's going to make us feel great, you know, that's going to give us good energy, that's going to be sustainable energy, that we're not getting that slump in the middle of the day. Because as vegans and people who eat vegan food can sometimes, the way that we eat carbs, it can make us quite sleepy, I found, you know, if I was having not enough protein and healthy fats. But I'm really lucky now. I live in like the one of the blue zones, the olive oil capital of the world, in Liguria. So I'm definitely not short on my healthy fats now, but I would really encourage people to make sure you get yourself a really good quality extra virgin olive oil. You will be doing yourself the biggest favor, making sure that you have that. Get it into your dressings on your salad. Mm. Add it to things at the end of cooking as well. Because when you cook with extra virgin olive oil, it changes the structure a little bit.
Yeah.
So the key is, and this is because Italians do this, this is who I picked this up off. So you make yourself a delicious risotto, and then you've got this beautiful risotto. It's all cooked and all creamy and lovely. And because you've used carnaroli rice and all the gluten's come out of that, and the starch has come out and made it like nice and creamy. But then add a slug of olive oil at the end once it's come off the stove and mix that into it. I put olive oil in my smoothies.
Wow.
I put a tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil in there because raw extra virgin olive oil is going to give you those omega-3s that you need, because there's other things you don't eat that have got that in.
Yeah.
And we need to balance that, get that fat balance right, you know. So it is, it's about getting healthy. This healthy eating, it shouldn't be complicated. It should be kept as simple as possible, that we eat nutritious food, whole food, Not saying don't have a treat of junk food and sweet food, but make sure it is a treat. You know, most of the time, if you eat plant-based whole food, most of the time, you're going to be well on the way to being a healthy person, you know. And I think it's just making sure that those foods are balanced. So it's like complex carbohydrates, good amount of protein, good amount of healthy fat. Don't shy away from fat. This low fat nonsense of the 70s and 80s that me and my mother grew up with, it's not the way to go. You know, I remember all that stuff, you know, and they were like, oh, low fat this, low fat that. And it's like, no wonder I ended up with Graves' disease. I was lactose intolerant, eating far too much cheese and not enough healthy fat. And now I'm like completely the opposite. I'm so much healthier since I stepped away from the dairy. And actually, I think a lot of people would find if they had gone onto a vegan diet and then they tried to eat dairy, it would probably make them a bit ill.
Yeah.
It's not something we're meant to eat. I really actually do believe that. I don't think we're meant to eat dairy. I think we're all lactose intolerant. We just force our bodies to accept it.
Yeah, definitely.
So I've used diet to not miraculously cure myself. I'm not shouting that line out because that's unfair on anybody who's unwell and has a chronic disease, and it's not realistic. But you can give yourself the best basis possible to be as healthy as possible just by planning a little bit. Meal planning is the key, I think.
You're going to
take a few supplements. People know what they need to take, you know, because we all know what it is we eat on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's just the key, really. And enjoy food, enjoy cooking real food. Because if you like to cook and you make cooking joyful, then you're going to cook real food and then you're going to be more healthy, you know.
Well, Jackie, you've been absolutely amazing. I mean, you've sort of shared so many tips there with us, and I'm definitely going to try the eating the kind of veg and everything and salad first and then the carbs.
Try it.
And then going for a little walk. So I'm going to start doing that for the next
week.
And
see how your energy is.
Yeah.
Just check your energy afterwards and you'll notice, oh, actually, I feel less that slump, you know, that afternoon slump, especially with your lunchtime meal.
Yeah.
If you do that, you won't get that afternoon slump, you know.
Okay.
And it really works, you know. But yeah, I recommend that one.
Okay.
And check out the Glucose Goddess, actually. She's got some really good advice on that.
Brilliant.
And there's a lot of these glucose teachers out there at the moment. So
yeah. And yeah, anyone listening as well, give it a go and email us at simplyvegan@anthem.co.uk and let us know how you feel after trying out Jackie's tips. Don't forget the Healthy Vegan Street Food book by Jackie Kearney is out now. So go and track that down. And I can't wait to try some of those recipes. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Really hope you enjoyed listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe and leave us a review on your platform of choice. Next week, we're joined by the plant-based health professionals to talk all things menopause for Menopause Awareness Month.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.